welcome back to the Shona Project podcast. I cannot believe it. Tammy Darcy, this is episode 15. That's incredible.
Episode 15. I missed you, Alison. It's been so lonely over here.
You've done great work, though. And thank you to everybody who's been listening to the podcast, because we've been getting such a great reaction and we're really proud of it.
Yeah, last week was amazing. For those of you that listened last week to Bobby speaking about her surgeries, I just got a text from her mom last night to say her retina has detached again and she's getting another surgery this week. So like, this is her seventh surgery in a couple of months. But like, I learned so much from her. I thought she was brilliant. So yeah, episode 15, what are we going to talk about this week?
We're going to talk about how to talk about sex and sexuality and sexual health with our teenage girls, because it's traditionally been quite an awkward topic for parents and children, carers and children to broach. And I might mention this later on as well, but I think my parents were pretty open, but they still had that undercurrent of we don't really talk about it that much. And we don't talk about it in terms of pleasure. We talk about it in terms of science and reproductive health and, you know, your own menstruation. Like, my dad was very open about that, which I know I've mentioned before in the podcast, but not extending the conversation to the fact that it's going to be part of our daughters' lives and how do we equip them with the best information. Or if it's us that's equipping them with the best information.
Yeah, for me, I think, look, there's loads of information out there on how to talk about like safe sex and, you know, periods and contraception and consent. Like, there's loads of information on that. For me, the thing that I really struggled with is that when I was growing up, it was like girls should protect their virginity at all costs. Like, you should not desire a person, you know, you should not desire sexuality. You should not have an appetite for it or a freedom about it, because there was like names and labels attached with women like that, you know? And I think our generation really need to fight back about that a little bit, but it's tricky because, you know, you want your daughter to be empowered and to be comfortable in her sexuality and to not pass on those same hang-ups that you were brought up with. But on the other hand, they're your little baby girl and you don't want anyone to ever go near them or touch them ever until they're, you know, like, we all make those jokes, oh, you know, you'll be 30 before you're allowed to go on a date and all this kind of stuff. It's like, avoid at all costs. I was listening to another podcast yesterday. It's Lily Allen's new podcast, actually. I'm really enjoying it. But she talked about, you know, losing your virginity as like a shameful thing, as something you lose, as opposed to like opening a new part of your life that, you know, can bring you joy and stuff like that. So, oh, I really struggled with this bit. And I think of all the topics we've covered, this is the one that I think is potentially the most important in terms of the kind of woman we want to raise.
Exactly. And I mean, you're at a stage where your daughter is at a completely different stage than like mine is. So it is a challenge. Like, we've talked to Joan about, you know, the reproductive, what happens in that respect. And she actually was very open to receiving that information and she didn't do the kind of that's gross. But my main thing is the fact that she is so young and to have these conversations now that she feels that she can continue to use me as a support and a resource for when she does enter that stage of her life. So Sarah Spruill, who is an occupational therapist and a sex educator, is someone who's on both of our radars and we know that she's brilliant. So we thought she would be ideal for this podcast.
She also has the best glasses. If anyone ever looks at her Instagram, her glasses selection is quite distracting and amazing. But yeah, let's get Sarah on.
So this is a topic that Tammy and I have been talking about for quite some time. So it seems appropriate that it's episode number 15. And we've mentioned her already, but let's get Sarah Spruill on the phone, on the line with us right now for the podcast episode. Episode 15, I can't believe it. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, I'm really excited about our conversation. So important.
It is. Sarah, we've given you an introduction now, but will you introduce yourself, please, and give us a bit of your own background?
Sure. I'm an occupational therapist that works in sexuality education. And my main sort of focus is supporting parents to nurture even more connection with growing kids by talking about sensitive things. So it's very much based on my experience growing up and being an 11 and 12 year old with a mum who was really doing her best to give me the information I need and the support. And I just kept shutting the door in her face and screaming, leave me alone, you know. So, and she didn't really have any clue of what I was getting up to in my teen years. And I wanted something different for the kids that I raised.
Absolutely.
We couldn't have a more perfect person for this conversation, honestly. Like, you're literally made for this chat. I might jump in first, yeah. Alison, if that's okay, because I think our conversation, any parent can look up online how to talk to kids about sex or what are the facts I need to talk to my kids about. But like, there's a little bit of nuance there that I kind of struggled with when like Freya was growing up, which was this like us being the generation that is shameful about our sexuality, that should never express that it's something that you want or desire, and it's something that you hold on to, like even that language around losing your virginity or somebody taking your virginity, and how it's, you know, really like something you'll never get back and something you need to hold on to. So in your experience with all the parents that you've spoken to, what are the kind of hang-ups that our generation have that we should really, really work hard not to bring forward to the next generation?
One of the big things that stops parents having open conversations is this idea that if we introduce a topic, it's more likely our young person is going to explore and engage with that thing. It's almost like we have this idea that if we are the only sort of information channel that they're getting, particularly if we are having conversations earlier. So in sexuality education research, the earlier topics can be introduced, the better off the relationship between an adult and a child is going to be, and it's minimizing sort of the awkwardness and the embarrassment. So that creates a huge barrier. And then of course there's the preconceived idea that conversations about bodies, sex, pleasure are in some way, that information is different to other sorts of health related information. And that's really the stigma that's coming from when we were growing up. So while there's no sort of magic tablet you can take to eliminate that stigma, it's really about noticing how do you feel different talking to your teenage girl about contraception, for example, as opposed to talking about her gym membership or the benefits of fresh air or the way the environment is polluting. It's sort of like all these things that are related to health, they tend to be open access unless it's to do with sexual health. And then this sort of deer in headlights experience comes on for most adults. And that makes it difficult for us. And it's not our fault that that happens.
And Sarah, what about like, you know, talking about this earlier on, like we all remember that conversation where we were like, what? You did what? When you're like talking to your parents about the kind of the basics. And we've had that conversation with Joan, and she actually, Tony, my husband, wanted to be the one to do that. And a car is obviously a good place sometimes to have big conversations. And she accepted it all very well. And actually this was a good number of years ago. Her very first question was about a very good friend of hers who has two moms. So she's like, well, how did they do it then? That's where her mind went straight away. So we've been open to that, but we haven't broached, because she is so young yet, but maybe we should be, the idea of having that as part of a relationship later on in a relationship.
So if I remember rightly, Alison, your daughter is 13. Is that right? Yeah, so it's so interesting when you say she's so young. And in my world, she's actually not young at all. Like, I have parents that come to work with me whose kids are younger than six, and we're already laying the foundation for open conversations later on. So it's very much about building a foundation. And I guess if someone listening has a daughter, 13, 14, 15, and there are conversations that they haven't had yet related to their young person's developing sexuality, I would say if you have a much younger child in your house, you're really lucky, because oftentimes younger children have an easier time of receiving mm-hmm. the information. So it's not to say there's nothing you can do if you've got a teenager, but it's more about how can you lean into all the other people in your home to ensure that conversations, rather than we're having the conversation now, conversations sort of permeate throughout day-to-day, everyday life. And you can do that by starting to talk more openly with like adult friends that are coming in. Like, I remember actually having, I think I was 22, so that's quite old in my world. And my grandmother, my mom, and my aunt were all talking about cervical smears, right? Me being totally like naive when it comes to those sort of things, I'm sitting in the lounge room with them and I say, "What's a cervical smear?" at 22. And my mom says, "Oh, you don't need to know about that yet." Mm. And I still remember it because actually I did need to know about that. That's really important information because there's so many things from that that question. And I don't know about anyone else here, but I was not asking many questions to do with bodies when I was that age, and definitely not when I was a teenager. They could have talked to me about sexually transmitted infections and sort of like everything to do about medical consent and comfort with my genitals. There could have been so many things. So how can we leverage the people in our lives we trust and even our younger kids to give us more and more opportunities to bring this up in everyday life? Whether our daughter, our teenage daughter is around or not, it's good practice to start just by default being more open.
Mm-hmm. So Sarah, the thing is that we've kind of already talked about the practicalities and, you know, how to talk about things like birth control, consent, but how do we ensure that our language is empowering for our girls? You know, we want them to explore, to discover, to feel free, you know, to have like healthy relationships, but we also don't want them to take any risks and, you know, to make sure that they don't get pregnant at 16. So how do we walk the line between them being empowered, but also teaching them how to take responsibility and also respect, to have respect for their own bodies?
Even the question makes me feel like we're juggling lots of balls, right? So I can imagine that like when a parent is in the thick of this, it just feels like, how can I maintain the balance? One of the sort of the pillars in the way I support parents to do this is to think about how we are not islands in terms of raising our daughters, right? So we can send a particular message, but there are all these other cultural messages about sex and their body out there in the world. And a lot of the messages that come from adults is very much about is risk averse and prevention of crisis, right? So that like STIs, pregnancy, consent. So it's not necessarily easy, but how could it be possible that we always, when we're thinking about creating conversations, that we try and default, if at all possible, to the joy of it, right? So the research in sexuality education shows that if young people are sort of presented with, don't have an STI, here's all the pictures of terrible STIs, this is a really bad thing, that it doesn't make any measurable difference to their willingness to use barrier methods, for example. So how can we approach this in a different way? So I suggest there's a little sentence starter that has been really useful in my parenting. Like my daughter is 20 now and I have an 18 and 16-year-old sons. I start sentences with, I need to apologize to you, right? And already what's happening is I'm flipping on its head the power dynamic between adults and teens, right? That adults are trying to control behavior and know best. So I need to apologize to you creates a sense of openness and receptiveness to what I'm going to say next. And it could be something like, I need to apologize to you. I did not realize that that adults should be talking to really young kids from the age of 4, that their bodies feel good. And they get to discover what feels good about their body and learn about it over time. And I didn't know that when you were small, and I'm sorry about that, because I know it would have been great if we could have been talking about that for all of your life, right? So what I've done there is I've leveled the power dynamic. I have introduced the idea that bodies feel good and that I made a mistake. And the more we can show up highlighting we keep making mistakes, the more open they're going to be to that one little moment in time where we actually say something that we really need them to hear. So it's almost like say nothing, but that one thing. There's a book about talking specifically to teens about things related to sex by Karen Rain. And she says, with teenagers, you get one question or one statement. And it's like you have to build up. 90% of the time, you're building trust and you're showing empathy and understanding and demonstrating that you're really listening and accepting that their lived experience is valid and deserving of respect. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, then you hopefully, fingers crossed, you get an opportunity to say one important thing. So while we're saying, oh, how do we talk about it? It's actually, how do we listen about it? And how do we just constantly bombard our kids with evidence that we love them, we value what they're saying, and we're a person that can hear really difficult things.
Do you know, Sarah, that is a common theme in all of our episodes, is about, you know, listening as parents, like how powerful that is, and how powerful that is, and to get information across both ways from them for us to receive their information and for us to give them information. What about, like, I know I'm of a generation where my mom was of a generation where it was very like you just didn't talk about anything really. Although I feel like my parents, being Canadian in the 80s, were more open. Like Dad, I've said this story on this podcast as well. Dad was the one that was like, when I got my period, he was like, "Now, sweetie, let's talk about what's happening to your body." I was like, "Nah, no, let's just make something instead." But there was, even though they were both quite open with us about things, there was that kind of element of still like shame under it. And I know that when I had my first high school boyfriend, my mom kind of scared me into any activity with him that potentially, and it was more actually around pregnancy, was the scary messaging more than actual, as you know, STIs or STDs and things like that. So I guess it's coming back to what we're saying before, like, how do we not scare them? And what do we do if you have a child who really is like, I don't want to talk about this with you?
Yeah. Two really important questions about making sure our kids get the information that is realistic and don't completely sort of freak them out. I think it's all about ownership. Like, we own that we are concerned about our kid and we want the best for them. And in fact, it's sort of our responsibility to make sure they have the information they need so they can make the decisions that are right for them. So in that instance, say my 14-year-old has her first boyfriend and she doesn't want to hear anything from me, I might say something like, do you know, it makes total sense that you don't want to hear something from me. This sort of conversation is icky and weird, and it feels like it should be private. So I'm reflecting back what I imagine her feelings are about the conversation. So she feels understood. And if she is still going, just stop, it means that I haven't communicated how much I understand that this is an awkward thing. And also I haven't communicated that she has the right to choose how the information is given. Okay. It's my responsibility that she has the information, but it's her body, her choice. She gets to decide how that information comes to her. Most teens will not choose a conversation with their parent eye to eye. You know, they'll probably say something like, just buy me the book. And for those of us who remember very clearly being given a book but nothing else, that can be quite activating. So how can we look at it more as a process of consent rather than I'm not doing my job well enough, or, you know, my kid's not going to get the information. So as a parent, we say, okay, not only is the information important, but the process of my daughter seeing someone respect her needs is like so much more valuable than talking about hormonal contraception and ovarian methods, right? So if you can have that in the back of your mind, that actually by respecting her needs, you're doing something far more important, then it's easier to sort of slide into and meet her needs from the communication perspective. And of course, we do need to know that they have the information. So you might say something like, I will get you a book. I've got a really good covering all bases book that I can suggest. And would you please text me the three contraceptive methods that are interesting for you or you think might be good for your body? Or something like that. So you're trying to develop some sort of reciprocal communication and leaning into where their natural communication sits. So you've probably had people on here already that have already advocated that if your kid is on TikTok, get TikTok and use it as your messaging method or Snapchat or whatever the thing is. Why, as adults, do we expect our teens to meet us where we are in our old communication styles when the whole point of this is that we follow along with them and support them rather than keep sort of dragging them into our world? That is not where connected parenting sits at all. It's far more about the teen taking the lead and us following along and demonstrating respect.
I love all of that. Don't you, Tammy?
So two things I'd love to pick up on that you just mentioned there. First one being, you know, maybe parents who are listening can use listening to this podcast as an opportunity to have that conversation, that first conversation, which is about, actually, I listened to a podcast today about how parents can support their daughters. And having heard it, I would like to apologize for you because I did grow up in a generation where it was seen as a shameful thing. And I don't want you to have that attitude. And I don't want to instill that attitude in you. So like, I'm doing my best to have open conversations. And I'd love to hear what you think about that. Second thing was around, you know, what you said about TikTok and them getting the information and maybe reaching out to them and say, you know, I'd love to see what conversations are going on this. And like, do you know any TikTokers or do you know any YouTubers that talk about this in a parallel way? And maybe, you know, you could share those things with me and then, you know, we could have a chat about it. So I think having that kind of collaborative approach that we're going to work together to kind of break down that stigma that was there when I was growing up and in a way that will empower you because I want you to view it differently to the way my generation did.
Yeah, and what I love about what you're saying is, again, you're meeting them where they are and their interest and flipping on its head that hierarchy of who's got the information. And I would almost even go so far as to say, like, just you probably have access to more accurate information than I do. Now, whether you believe that or not is a whole other thing. But I think if you say it, then it creates this sort of lovely, juicy dynamic where a teen's going, oh, this is, I bet mum doesn't know this, you know, pass it on. I bet dad hasn't realized that we all know that, you know, whatever it is about the clitoris, for example. So, so continually try and flip that this hierarchy on its head, if at all possible, about absolutely everything. And yes, we're claiming our own shame, and we're doing it in a way that it's our responsibility, and that we're not. It's a fine line, isn't it? Because one of the sentence starters that I use in my sort of support of parents is that idea that when I was a kid, which you've brought up there, Tammy, and it needs to be very nuancedly held because if we're saying when I was a kid, it wasn't really great, you're really lucky now, things are much better, it erases the complexity of their lives, right? And while they might not have as much shame as us, if we sort of talk about that, it, again, it erases the importance of whatever shame they have. So it's just a really interesting thought experiment to just provide more and more openness from your end to anything to do with sexuality and pleasure and the clitoris and orgasms and masturbation, if at all possible. And know that it's a work in progress and that we can all only do the best we can. It's all about self-compassion at the end of the day.
Sarah, this is so useful. And again, I feel like I'm at the, in many ways, advantage. Like, I mean, Tammy, as her daughter being older and mine not entering that stage of her life yet, I feel a little bit selfish with all of that. So, but thank you, because the advice is really good. What would you say? I suppose there will always be circumstances where within a circle of friends that some people and individuals are much more open about what they may or may not be doing and much more active in that side of their lives than others. Like, just, I know advice, like, I'd like to hear your thoughts on how you talk to your daughter if, for example, they just are not there yet and yet they feel the pressure they should be there.
Yeah. One of the really lovely things to do is reinforce that how they feel is not, it doesn't sit independently from what our culture says. So I use the term super secret lies or super secret messages. So in our family, we talked about from when the kids were 10, 8, about the sort of super secret messages that the world around you sends. And that would be things like, oh, look at that ad on the bus. Everyone's got long hair and white skin and whatever, or the shaving ad in the movie cinema before you sort of sit down and watch whatever you're watching. And so when a young person is in their group and some people are doing things and some people aren't, it's not just about that dynamic and trying to keep up. It's a combination of all the top secret lies that we've been surrounded with throughout, you know, growing up. And so really leaning into the challenge of that. So rather than saying, it's hard being different and that of course there's going to be pressure to want to keep up. How could it be possible to even acknowledge that when other people do things and it feels like the cool kids or the right thing to do, and people will like you more if you do that as well, it feels like a lot of pressure, and that sometimes we do take action on that pressure even when we don't want to. And I think the danger of supporting our child to be themselves and not follow the crowd is that, and I'm going to say inevitably, I don't think I'm being negative. I think every human grows up looking back, having experiences of where they did things because everyone else was doing them. How can we sort of embrace that and talk about that? Everybody does that. Right? So this is a level up from what we usually talk about, which is support your kid to say no and everything's, you know, that's going to be great and that's the important role as an adult. But I'm going one step further and saying, how can you even embrace that when they make decisions that are influenced by others, that we still love and care for them anyway? Because oftentimes the place where communication doesn't happen is when they've done something that we have said at home, like, you know, we prioritize consent in our house and we don't say yes when we don't want to do things and we accept that there's peer pressure. It's such a sort of simplistic message. It's much more difficult but much more powerful to sit in the gray of, oh, sometimes we do things because we need to fit in and we just don't have the capacity to be who we are. But at least if we know who we are and we're still trying to fit in, there is such juicy, wonderful learning from that. And I think in terms of building connection, that is the place that if we can show up as parents, that we really will get a return on our investment of talking about hard things. And I know it's probably, I'm sort of saying this through gritted teeth. I'm like, oh, yeah. What's the sexuality educator saying? But that's where teenagers live. So we need to talk about that.
That's brilliant. Sarah, before I ask you, I suppose I want to ask you where people can find other information, but you've said so much really valuable. You've said so many valuable things this morning, but is there anything that you really want to get across to parents listening and also other resources you think that might be a benefit to them?
Yeah. One of the ways you can open your minds to every possible thing that you could possibly talk about would be to get a book that answers teen questions or is focused on supporting teens. So Sex Educated by Grace Alice O'Shea is the Irish one, which is amazing. You will not come across a situation to do with sex and teenage life that isn't covered in that book. I would also recommend a book by Karen Rain. I've alluded to it earlier. It's 10 Rules for Talking with Teenagers About Sex, Breaking the Hush Factor, because talking to teenagers is really listening to teenagers. And that can be quite challenging when we realize that respectfully we're talking more, but that we're talking less, but they're doing more. That's a really sort of challenging dynamic to sit with. And I suppose the final thing that's really helped me and helps the parents I work with is explore the world of self-compassion, because parenting is full of guilt and if only I'd and I wish I'd known and all those things that we regret. And that drains our energy and stops us from living in the moment and showing up again as our best self. So self-compassion is a beautiful thing to explore because it's teaching you to support yourself in some of the most challenging times, the most challenging times. And I don't think I'm overstating, Tammy, what it's like to raise a teenager, to teenage daughter, or teenage son in today's world. It's probably the most amazing boot camp of personal growth you'll ever go through. And I, at the risk of being Pollyanna, some of my biggest learnings about who I am and busting my own sort of history of sexual shame and sexual trauma have come through parenting on the coalface with my teens. And so my encouragement is, I suppose, that if it feels hard, that's because it really is hard. And that's where the joy and the excitement and the connection is built.
Sarah, and that is brilliant.
You're doing a great job.
And I mean, I suppose because you've had the lived experience as well, it's amazing. Before we let you go, very quickly, where can people find you?
Oh, I'm on Instagram is my main social platform. My website is sarahsproul.com. I'm just, yeah, those main places. And of course, you can email me if you want personal support, because oftentimes you listen to a podcast like this and think, she doesn't realize how bad it actually is at our house. Mm. Like if she knew, she'd know there's no answer. That's not true. There's always an answer and there's always support.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us on the Shona Project podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I know people will get so much from this. Thank you so much, Sarah. Sarah's amazing. That was incredible. And such, you know, Tammy, it's one of those episodes that I'm going to go back to time and time again. I know myself. I've actually gone back to a number of our episodes time and time again with a notepad to write down information. Dr. Joanna Fortune's been incredible. I did go back to the Disordered Eating podcast with Bodywise and make some notes there. So even as a listener, we're getting so much from our wonderful guests, and that was incredible.
Yeah, I've been like speaking to parents and even you know, in my friend groups and through work, when parents ask me questions, I've been like, well, actually, you know, and pulling out something Coleman said or something that, you know, Louise said about anxiety. So we've both learned a huge amount in the last few weeks.
Huge, huge. We've really enjoyed it. I like spending time with you on a personal note. So I've really enjoyed that as well. So as everybody knows about podcasts, there's so much that goes into making them, and we've really enjoyed it. And we're just hitting maybe pause for a little while, but we will definitely be back with more.
Yeah, I mean, we intended to do a couple of episodes. We've done 15. I do think there's a lot more to be explored. But we need to just take like a little reset and review and be like, what have we achieved? What do we want to achieve next? How can we, you know, like, podcasts have to add value to people's lives. And I think so far it has, but we don't want to get to a stage where we're repeating ourselves or covering all topics. Yeah. So yeah, we're going to take a little reset for a little while. But also, we would love
to. We'd also, I was going to say also, Tammy, just to highlight all the work that you've done and the mini episodes that people can check out as well, which is, you know, when we started this, one of the priorities is we wanted to have teen voices represented on the podcast as well. And they're really, really valuable as well.
Yeah, I've got two more actually to put out. So I'm going to share one of those probably Wednesday and then the following Wednesday. But I think for you and me for now, much as we love hanging out with each other, we're just going to take a little break, reset, but we will be back. So we do still want people to get in touch with us about future topics. And we can think about how we can address those topics going forward. So the email is still there, podcast@shona.ie. Please send us your feedback on our Instagram or Alison's Instagram, and don't be afraid to tell everybody about the 15 episodes that are there for their benefit.
Exactly. And it's been a pleasure doing it, and we love it. And thank you so much to everybody who's listened already, and we'll continue to work together. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Alison. See you soon.